Welcome to Cyber Therapy. My name's Ashley and I'm your host. And I'm here with our thuggish looking host, co-host. What's her name?
What's my name? You don't know my name? Yeah. We've been co-hosting this thing for over 20 something episodes.
I thought you were gonna come up with a cool name since you're wearing a cool hat.
Thuggy T. I don't know. There you go. That's about as good. Look at the gray in the beard and tell me that I can come up with a cool name ever. Never happen, Ash.
Hey, I just thought I'd give you an opportunity. It's a warm-up for the game that's coming later. So,
I'm just improv a bit. There is no way I keep this hat on for the whole show because it's already 1,000 degrees in my home office and I'm just going to melt. So I'm going to take it off and throw in the towel.
Oh, and there was a tag in there. Good job.
There was a tag in there. That's too funny. All right.
Awesome. Well, if you're new here, thank you for tuning in. This is the show where we get to know the humans behind security. And we have a really cool guest today. Super excited to have him on. But before we get there, wanted to just talk a little bit about our banter topic for today, which is if you were to basically run your own company or run your own business, have you ever wanted to? And what would it be? What product or service would you provide?
Oh, man, that's totally a loaded question. Because I've always wanted to. I've never really fully done it. I imagine it would be a cybersecurity product simply because I've been in cybersecurity my whole career. But, I mean, simultaneously, I had a conversation with my wife literally just last weekend about someday opening a high-end cocktail bar. So entrepreneurship comes in lots of different flavors. It doesn't have to be a product, or it can be a service. It can be local. It can be national. It can be a big business like a cyber company. So, who knows? I'll do something someday, I'm sure. How about you?
Very cool. If money wasn't a thing, I'd probably be a private practiced adolescent therapist.
Ah, look at you.
Why I enjoy doing cyber therapy because at least it gives me a little flavor of that.
Your passion project, yeah. Cyber therapy.
Exactly.
Well, cool. You're supposed to be on vacation this week, aren't you?
Yes. We were in Canada. We cut our trip short, but that's because I have a procedure for my ankle later tomorrow. So figured we'll come back. We just xeriscaped our front yard. So I'll share pictures about it later. But we spent a lot of time planting plants in the heat.
Sounds like you had a fantastic little mini vacation. So, yeah. All right. Are we ready to bring on our esteemed guest?
Yes.
Awesome. So our guest today is Paul Isidorian. My mentor in all things podcast, to be honest with you. I don't think I've ever actually said that to him outright, but I always look to him to try to understand the future of video, audio podcasts, of content creation. He is the OG of cybersecurity podcasts. Paul, were you the first one? Were you the first one to put out cyber content?
I wasn't the first. I was probably one of three, perhaps. I think it was the Network Security Podcast, Security Now. Myself, there might have been a couple of someone screaming at me in the background.
What year did you take the deep dive and say, I'm going to start making cyber content?
It was October 2005. We recorded episode one of what was a different name back then due to trademark issues. We had to change the name. So it was once called Paul.com Security Weekly.
Ah, but the original person that owned Paul.com made you change it?
Well, I wouldn't say made. I did a whole presentation with my attorney at a conference in Boston about it. It was like called Hacking the Trademark. You can still find it online, as well. So, I mean, that tells the whole, you know, the whole story, which saves me, which is nice because it saves me from having to tell it. I do say it allows you to learn a lot about business, going through that experience and intellectual property type stuff.
Funny little side fact. I don't think, Ashley, did I ever share how I got the Twitter handle of TXS, a three character Twitter handle?
Tweedle handle?
Tweedle handle?
No.
Because I had to do something similar.
Is that your new business? It's a competitor to Twitter called Tweedle?
It's going to be Tweedle. That's exactly what it's going to be. So I got a Tweedle handle, but to get that handle, I had to actually claim copyright or trademark. Because it was somebody else was squatting it and hadn't used it for over 2 years. And so I just like basically pointed Tweedle to a bunch of links where I had done public presentations and said that I should have a blue check mark, therefore you should give it to me. And they gave it to me. This was like 2007 or something before they actually started putting policies in place around this. So that's how I ended up getting a three-letter Tweedle handle. So same kind of hackery. But anyways, Paul is the founder of Security Weekly. Paul is also currently, what's your title over there at Eclipsium?
Firmware Security Evangelist.
Firmware Security Evangelist. So he does very smart technical stuff with cybersecurity firm Eclipsium, who is actually, as a firm, does some really super interesting stuff on the firmware slash hardware security side of the world. And recently you made the switch over there after running Security Weekly for 15 years, right? 16 years?
Yeah, 15 or 16 years, something like that.
That's a long, long dedicated piece of time to be running a single piece of content. What made you start Security Weekly? Where did the idea come from?
So it's actually a pretty interesting story. The university that I worked at the time, it was a pretty big university, and we had a lot of different colleges and schools and different people responsible for information technology and security in all those different departments. So I used to give them a monthly update. And it's funny, like some of the spirit behind Security Weekly was in some of those original presentations. Like I specifically remember talking about Madonna's website getting hacked and making jokes about it, and then describing website defacement and things of that nature. So there was definitely an entertainment value to it. And for whatever political reasons, that whole kind of series of Paul's presentations ends. And my coworker at the time, Duck Sauce, was like, "You should do a podcast." I'm like, "Dude, what is a podcast?" He's like, "Well, you get, that thing that Steve Jobs made, the iPod, the original I think there might have been the second generation out by then. But I bought a used first generation iPod, which is like massive today by today's standards. And I started listening to podcasts. And I was like, oh, that's just a bunch of people sitting around talking. Like, I think I can do that.
We can handle that. Yeah. What was the concept though? Was it because what's neat about Security Weekly?
There's no mystery there, Tyler.
Well, hold on.
I wanted to get together with my friends and drink and talk about security. I mean, that was really like my business idea was I want a business where I sit around with my friends and drink beer and talk about security. And that literally is still my business today.
That's too funny. So, but in all seriousness, for those that don't know, Paul runs Security Weekly. It's at securityweekly.com. I think I have a lower third here. I can pop up. It's at securityweekly.com. And there is how many shows on securityweekly.com these days?
Six shows. It just keeps growing.
Cool about it, what I love about it, is each show has its own flavor, its own culture, right? Its own.
You want to say je ne sais quoi.
Je ne sais quoi. Exactly. Exactly what I wanted to say. Just didn't want to mumble it like Tweedles.
Like I did.
but when you came up with the first one, though, the idea was more entertainment value, more just like, hey, let's beat up on the current news. Like, what was the thought process? Or was it just totally raw at the time of, let's just do something and see if it hooks? Like, where did the idea come from?
I think for Paul's Security Weekly, it was definitely get together with my friends, drink beer, and talk smack about security, but also educate people, right? So we were, I think, some of the pioneers kind of doing more technical segments. We even still call them technical segments today in audio format on the podcast. And so it was definitely a deep technical dive. It was definitely laying the smack down in information security in the security community. So that was Paul's Security Weekly, and we still do that today. What's interesting is there was efforts to, so another, speaking of trademarks, Hack Naked, is a trademark associated with Security Weekly. And we tried a number of different shows with the Hack Naked kind of moniker. Cause we kind of all were in this chat one day, and I want to say we were going to ShmooCon in 2006. I think that's why I mentioned ShmooCon 2006. It must have been 2006. And we said, we need a slogan. Like, we want to print up t-shirts and we need a slogan. And we're coming up with all these off the wall slogans. And Larry types into the chat. I think we're on individual chats. It was like Pigeon or something like that, right? Using OTR. And Larry pasted to me Hack Naked. And I repasted that to everyone else who was involved with Security Weekly at the time. And the reaction from every single one of them, that's awesome. That's it. That's the one. That's hilarious. LOL, Raffle, the whole thing. And I was like, well, okay, it's Hack Naked. And so we went to ShmooCon and printed Hack Naked on t-shirts.
I remember them. I remember them distinctly. And I had that logo, that very unique silhouette logo, right?
Yeah, it had. It's gone through a numerous changes over the years. The Hack Naked kind of, like the slogans always remained. So.
So in those early days, how, what was it like building from those roots?
Was I totally forgot what I was talking about. I'm sorry, Ashley. I forgot what I was talking about. Thank you for bringing me back. Hack Naked was, we started making new shows. Like we only had Paul Security Weekly and we started making new shows. So we tried Hack Naked TV, Hack Naked at Night, Hack Naked News. And we tried like all these other shows. I mean, somewhat unsuccessfully, right? Like he, what is the Churchill quote? Success is going from failure to failure without loss of enthusiasm. And so we just kept trying. And so those were some of our first shows were themed around Hack Naked. So I think the news show might have been one of the first ones, perhaps. And it took off, I think, once we changed the name to Security Weekly News and not Hack Naked News.
So follow-on question to that. Do you think you hit it big because you looked like this back then? I mean, do you think that was what the driving factor was? It's
just pure coincidence, Tyler.
I mean, because quite frankly, you look like you could have been straight out of like the WWE or something like, I'm coming for you.
the whole photo shoot was hilarious. That's a story for another time. Yeah, but so... I think what's also interesting, and Tyler, you were kind of hitting on this when we were prepping for this, that, you know, I gave you kind of the Security Weekly origin story in abbreviated form of that, right? But each of the shows has its own origin story. Like Hack Naked News, which would become Security Weekly News, was basically me trying to address the feedback of, hey, Paul, I don't want to listen to a 2 to 3 hour show every week of all you guys just horsing around and talking about security. Now, there's a large group of people that do like that format and likes hearing us talk about stuff like that and kind of drone on and banter. But for those that didn't, I'm like, well, I'm not changing the original show. Like there's too many people that like that format. So I'm like, I'll just create a new show and that'll be the format. And that one really caught on because it was appealing to that audience that wanted it in that format. So, I mean, a word of advice that I was listening to a podcast guy on, I think Jordan Harbinger show, one of those that was like, don't like fear of missing out. So don't create your podcast and try and appeal to everyone. So that's why I started spinning off into other ones. And I think the first one after that was Enterprise Security Weekly. And that's because I worked for Matt Alderman at Tenable and I was doing a lot of market research for my role at Tenable. And I left Tenable and I was like, you know, market research and competitive analysis and trying to figure out what companies do and comparing them, like, I bet that'd make a pretty good show because no one's really talking about that. Mm-hmm. It's actually one of, I think, our most downloaded show, perhaps.
Yeah, and I claim full credit for that.
Yeah, I pulled Tyler in on that. I'm like, it's Tyler, I'm creating the show where, like, basically we bash vendors. We bash their messaging and they like
bash messaging left and right.
They like it and we compare and them and we talk about what they do. We talk about funding and he's like, I'm all in.
It sounds perfect. And they keep sponsoring. We bash their messaging yet they keep sponsoring. Mm-hmm. We try not to bash the sponsor.
Brand awareness, man.
We try not to bash the people that are paying the
bills. Yeah, we should clarify that, right? On Enterprise Security Weekly, we've never like bashed anyone's product. If we do read something about the product and then go, well, I don't think that's going to work, but it could, but I haven't seen it. Like, I'm willing to talk. We're always like have that open dialogue. Like, hey, we're willing to talk and help you with your product if you want help or see your product. And so, yeah, we try never to just say that product sucks.
Yeah, no. And it's and on ESW Enterprise Security Weekly, we don't pull punches. We're like, ouch, that press release is the most, you know, gobbledygook, confusing, cringeworthy. Right. And that's fine. Like, listen, everybody misses sometimes, right? Everybody puts out misses sometimes. And I'm sure you can dig up some of the stuff I've done over the last 20 years and laugh at that too, right? So I don't know. I think you gotta be able to laugh at yourself to maintain some kind of sense of sanity. And so anyways, that's what we do in the shows. You know, what was... And Ashley, you want to take the next one, Ashley? I have a couple.
Well, I want to poke at something that Paul talked about earlier. He talked a little bit about his failures. So I wanted to poke a little bit there. Mm. How long were you running those before you deemed it a failure? And why do you think they failed?
In other words, we're at episode 23. Should we stop?
Yeah. You know, I don't. So there's been a hit. I mean, there has been shows that. So like Tradecraft Security Weekly was really just, it was hard to find someone to do that one. Right. So we didn't actually, I never really canceled that one, and I would never deem it a failure. So, you know, there's that. But Secure Digital Life was another podcast that we started. And usually like after a year, like I tried to give them a year to get traction in the market. And if they didn't, like Secure Digital Life was just too much of a pivot into a different market. It wasn't the cybersecurity professional. It was more targeting the home user. And we just didn't reach and resonate with that audience. And it would have been too much, I think, in like a marketing spend to push into that market. So we unfortunately had to kill that show. Compliance and Security Weekly was another one. It just wasn't resonating with our audience. So we had to stop that show. But like, I never kill it entirely. Like, I don't take it off the internet either. So I leave them there. And then I'm like, maybe it just wasn't the right time. Like, so we can always bring them back into the fold, you know, if we need to. Or I change the name, like I did with the news show. I'm like, it's not working with this name. It's not working, you know, maybe with this format, with this cadence. So we did change the format and cadence. So I do give things, you know, a good try.
Okay, cool. Thank you for that.
So that process to me is super intriguing. You know, you are today one of the original old school content creators.
Old, Tyler.
You're an old man. No. You're one of the old school content creators, and to hear you talk about it is like just the words you choose to use and how you analyze the market that you live in, not the cybersecurity market, but the market that you live in from a podcast and content creation vantage point, really clearly demonstrates that you sit down and you're conscious about the decisions you make for the business. And that to me is very intriguing from an entrepreneurial standpoint, that journey. When you started with a bunch of friends, let's put a show out there and maybe it'll be cool and maybe it'll take off. At which point do you feel that you were finally like, all right, hey, this is like a serious freaking business that generates revenue that we can turn into something, you know, that can pay salaries and have a company around. How did you make that switch? What was the lightning moment? Or, you know, is it something that took years and years before you finally dove into?
It did take years and years. I don't make it sound like I was like figured everything out easily or like I knew everything, because basically my nickname is the salad shooter, because I just have lots of ideas and I just spit them out like a salad shooter. And like sometimes they're good and most of the time they're not. But I spit out enough that like I increase the odds that like one is going to be like make a really awesome salad or whatever.
Spaghetti, you know, on the wall at some point.
Exactly. Something's going to stick. So, but what was your question again?
At what point did it took you many years?
Oh, yeah. So I struggled getting sponsors always. It was always, I don't really like sales. And it's really hard to convince people to spend money on a podcast, especially one that's a bunch of people sitting around drinking and talking about security. And so I had some success. But when I was working for Tenable Network Security, I spent time as a security evangelist and I worked in the marketing group. That's typically where you put your evangelism type people. It's where I work at Eclipsium today. And I spent some time in product marketing. I was actually the product marketing manager for the Nessus product line. Oh. And it wasn't until I was like fully on that side of it and had experienced it for a couple of years that I'm like, I've really experienced like what it is to be a customer of Security Weekly. And like, now I know what my customers would want, because I basically played the role of my customer for a year or two. It was at that moment, and it was like a perfect storm, right? I mean, let's be honest, my options were fully vested at Tenable. And I had learned, right? I had learned about marketing and what my clients wanted. Security Weekly was going really well. I had just overcome the trademark issue. In fact, it's actually a blessing. The trademark dispute slowed me down enough so that I think I exited at the perfect time from Tenable and said, I'm going to do this full time. Because shortly thereafter, Ron Gula exited Tenable, and then they went on the path to go IPO. Matt Alderman exited Tenable. And after I had exited, I was like, wow, I really don't want to be CEO. Like, this is not my thing at all. And I'm like, I'm really more CTO material. And so I'm like, I really need a CEO. And I really love working with Matt Alderman. And he would be the perfect CEO. He spent time here. I worked for Matt at Tenable, not in product marketing, but in like a market research kind of role. And so Matt and I had developed a very good relationship. I'm like, dude, you should come over and be CEO. He's like, really? I'm like, really? You should. I know you got all these amazing offers. Forget those. This is fun. Like,
come to this.
We
get together. So right?
Come to this one. We get together and drink, and we talk about security. And this is our job. And he's like, yeah, that's actually kind of appealing. So yeah. So Matt came over, and I think we exited at the right time too. We exited in September of 2020 when there was still, and I think I can't say I had a crystal ball, right? But I could kind of see the writing on the wall. I'm like, it's going to be harder to get sponsors. I'm like, there's going to be a lot more podcasts. Podcasts are mainstream because now when I tell people, they're like, what do you do for a living? I'm like, I own a podcast company. Oh, that's so cool. I just started listening to podcasts. Dude, 2005, I'm like, yeah, I do a podcast. They're like, what's a podcast? What's what is that? How do I listen? I don't understand, right? The technology hadn't been built into all vehicles that were you were driving on the road. So it was definitely a niche thing that became mainstream. And I somehow knew the pandemic was going to have some impact. I'm like, everyone's sitting around at home. And I'm like, and you're sitting around at home and you're drinking, you're going to want to do a podcast. And sure as you know what, 500,000 podcasts existed in the world, or I think that's the world, in pre-pandemic times. Post-pandemic times, the last time I counted, it was 2.2 million.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, the market exploded. There's a list I saw today of 55 cybersecurity podcasts, and I had at least two off the top of my head to add to that list.
How do you stay differentiated in that space?
Luck, because I was one of the first ones, and people are already subscribed to my feed.
You had the core base audience that liked the style of show that you put together,
right?
And I think there's a network effect to that, right? There's you know people who tell other people, and then they talk about it offline, and that stuff sticks. So that's definitely a big piece of it. And I think for us, like, we're a new podcast, right? We've been in the show. When did we start, Ashley? This is 23 episodes.
November every other week. Of last year.
Oh my gosh, November. We're coming up on a year. Oh,
that's this fast. Is also why I was asking about timeline. Like, how long did you actually go for?
Gotcha. Yeah. So now I forgot where I was going with that. But anyways,
To be successful, you're gonna put a lot into marketing right now. I mean, if I were to, I estimate in looking at the podcasts that are on the market today and the ones that came up in the past few years that are doing really well, my estimation is they're spending at least 25% of their own effort, time, resources, money on marketing and audience growth. And I never wanted that. Like, I benefited from organic growth, and I'm like, I'd rather take my 25% and I want to go figure out some cool Linux stuff or hack into firmware, or, you know what I mean?
There's something about that though, because I think, sure, you can put money into marketing and market yourselves, but I think also the natural culture of what the hosts bring to the table make things successful as well, right? Because if you didn't have the right je ne sais quoi on the show, it just wouldn't stick, no matter how much marketing you put behind it. If you put two duds or three duds in a room and say, drink and talk about security, it could just fall flat, right? It has to have the right, people, the right personalities. Yeah. And you have to work at that, right? And you guys, luckily, you had it right out of the gates. You're a bunch of fun personalities. It hit, it clicked. And sure, the audience wasn't there because podcasts were nascent and it was super young, but people hooked onto you guys. I mean, I've known, before I even met you, I knew of your show and I knew of everything you were creating. So I think there's a certain level of cultural, personal impact that can make a show stand out and be very unique, even without significant marketing dollars. Then it's just a matter of getting the social following and kind of going viral in an organic sense, right?
So, like, I had no idea what I was doing creating this podcast business. Like, just be perfectly frank, right? And looking back on it, I was like, wow, I did create culture, like not knowing it. Like now I've like read the books and we've talked about it with smart people that have built successful businesses and understand culture. I'm like, oh yeah, like I did that, but I didn't really know that that's what I was doing. Like, I'm not going to lie about it. Like that's what it was. It was organic,
but, you did.
But I made very, like there were a couple of principles that I put in place that I realized that I did a good job of to create the culture that we have. One was, for security professionals, by security professionals. I'm like, if you're coming on the show, like you have to do this. Like we're not journalists, and I love journalists and respect them greatly, but that's not our thing. Our thing is you're a practitioner in this field, and then you're going on the show and you're sharing what you learned. I mean, it's why I still code. It's why I run Linux on all my systems. I still do all the techie things and maintain my practitioner level status, and I'm part of this because I love doing that. Like I would never not do
what podcast style. It's in the DNA.
The other thing was primarily because I'm a nerd, and I started programming when I was 7 years old, and I had my first sysadmin job while I was still in college, and I had a lot of great mentors over those years, and that, remember that like mug or t-shirt that said go away or I'll replace you with a very small shell script?
Absolutely.
I took that to heart. Like I am huge on automation and automating, like using technology, using new technology and automating it. So when it came time to producing the podcast, I was like, we're not a podcast company, we're a technology company, which actually presents some challenges too, because when people come to Security Weekly, if they want to do podcasts and like AV stuff, I'm like, it's some of that. I'm like, but it's like 50-60%. You got to know Linux and Python and scripting and technology stuff, because I made it more about the technology. And that's how today we're able to crank out, I think it's somewhere between 14 and 18 hours of content a week.
Wow.
Out of a single studio.
That's insane.
With like a staff of anywhere from 1 to 3 production people.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, Ashley,
we automate everything.
Your whole request now for more of you are done. It's gone. Stamp no forever.
Oh, man. I wanted to interject here because one of the podcasts that you did before, I was listening to it, it was on Barcode, and you talked about how one of your mentors, I think by the name of Lori, instilled in you like the heart of like basically documenting your way out of a role or position, right? And becoming an expert, you document, you teach people, and then you move on to become another expert in something else. How did that get pulled into essentially what you built at Security Weekly? Because
I mean,
there's not a lot of people to teach to. You only have 1 to 3 people. Right. Who are working with you. So I'm curious to see how that process went.
Yeah, I mean, I basically followed that philosophy to a T when I was building Security Weekly, because I'm like, all right, I'm going to do it. So I'm going to edit the audio. I'm going to publish it to all the places. I'm like, then I'm going to automate it. And then I'm going to teach you how to do it and how to automate it. And so I basically automated myself out of the job of production in my own company, because that's what I was taught to do. Like, and it's a great business thing. Like, I can't do everything, right? So I have to automate myself out of a job. But it's also what I learned. And again, like I didn't do this on purpose. Like afterwards, I learned like this is what a good leader does. I'm like, oh, well, I actually did that. Cool. And you can't do this all the time, but like doing that, the job, and then hiring someone to do that job, and then becoming a leader, and you both know like I did that job. So like it's almost like organic empathy. When you
there's also I think the trust too, right? Especially if you witness them taking on the responsibility and executing to a T, there's like an innate teamwork and growth there,
right? Which I think, or make mistakes, cool. Because I'm like, you know what, I made mistakes too, like it's totally fine, like you overcome them and move on. Yeah,
there was
so that's
another question
that's how we built a
to that,
podcast,
but I don't
company
remember what it was.
It does 18 hours a week now.
18 hours. That's so
something
so,
like that. I mean, there have been.
How many co-hosts are on the combination of shows? Do you have a rough count? Because this is one of the coolest things about being a co-host on one of your shows is that network of people, right? That network of people are just,
I agree.
They're so cool, so fun, so smart. Some of the most genius people I know are hosts or co-hosts on some of your shows. How broad is that network now? How many people are, or maybe have been, right? If we were to even broaden
it. Oh, have been is,
wow,
could be 50 people or more. I mean, wow. It's probably 20 today. But that was a huge part of building a successful podcast company, was convincing like your, basically your friends to come hang out with you for like very little or no compensation. just come like do the show. I'm like, it'll be great to get your name out there. Like, it's totally fine. Right. And I'm like, I'll buy you pizza and beer. Like, that was basically the deal.
So, right? So one of our listeners live right now is the infamous Sam. And she is one of your esteemed production leaders. And she said there's about 15 to 20-ish today. Yeah. So that's pretty amazing. And I definitely feel honored to be kind of grouped in with some of those folks, right? I mean, it's just a who's who, like, of just super smart people.
Yeah. And Sam is amazing, too. And
oh, she's awesome.
You know, like, while we're talking about, like, how Paul created and sold a podcast company, you know, it doesn't happen with people like Sam. And I don't know if I said it on an interview or just with my friends that when it's like me and my wife, I know that I have certain deficiencies in organization. I think I was telling you guys, right? And when you're in a business, I can hire for my deficiencies. And that's why I hired Sam, because Sam is super organized and I am not. And I'm like, we are not going to be successful without Sam or someone like Sam that has those skills that can keep us on track, make sure we're not dropping the ball and everything, and keep things moving forward and organized. So there's a lot of, love you too, Sam. There's a lot of humility, I think, that comes with creating a successful business that I never like realized, right? Like, I had to go, I don't want to be the CEO. Like, I need to get over that. And I'm not the person that's going to organize it. Like, I need someone for that. And I can't host all the shows myself either. So I need my friends' help to, you know, host all the shows.
It's just such great learnings there, right? Because those learnings are not podcast specific learnings, right? Mm. These are generalized business learnings on, you know, how to impart culture, how to know your own limitations and hire for limitation for gaps that you have as a leader. I mean, it's just such an amazing story. And it's not directly connected to cyber in the sense that you built some cyber technology to secure something, right? But you helped foster the culture. You helped grow the culture. You helped people learn from a cyber culture vantage point. So of course, you know, without becoming too sappy, thank you, Paul, for that. We really do appreciate the efforts that you've done for the last decade and a half. So, the next question I had is, where are you now? So you sold the company to Cyber Risk Alliance. Happy exits. Everything's moving forward. And you've recently taken a new gig. Where are you now? And are you able to take any of the learnings that you learned in your 15 years plus as a cyber content creator to what you're doing at Eclipsium now? And what is some of the coolest content that you're creating over there now?
Well, that's a lot of questions all rolled into one.
Well, feel free to blast me and go back and forth on them.
So Security Weekly was acquired by the Cyber Risk Alliance September of 2020.
And, okay, so 2 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. So I worked there as like the chief innovation officer for a while, just kind of oversee the transition. And then, you know, as we're pushing into the beginning of this year, you know, I was talking with Matt and I'm like, I don't know that I was tired of running a podcast company, but I'm like, it changed. Like, I've been basically running the same company for 16 years. I'm like, I want to take what I've learned. I'm going to go do cybersecurity. Like, I really want to work in cybersecurity. Not that I didn't before, but I wanted to take on a role for a company or have my own startup in cybersecurity. And I love firmware. Like, I've always loved firmware. I've loved the challenges it presents. I love the unique and awkwardness. Someone in a comment thread said firmware is just software that's inconvenient to program. Like, I love that aspect of it, right?
So the TLDR on firmware is that it's usually the underpinnings at a hardware level. It's the software that runs in silicon at a hardware level that supports most of the devices that we use today have some kind of fundamental firmware components to them. And it's different to develop for, because you're pushing code onto a particular chip, onto a particular piece of storage in hardware, versus you know, a completely virtualized universe where you push code into a cloud and it executes in some right. invisible workload somewhere. So from a TLDR perspective, for those in the audience that don't know what firmware is, that's what excites you.
Yeah. It's kind of like if you're writing firmware, you take what you write software today and do it in a different language with one hand while you're standing on one leg. Like that's mm-hmm. some of the challenges that firmware gives you. And so like I've always looked at printer firmware. Larry and I wrote a book on WT54G routers, and I started reverse engineering firmware, and I always dug into the firmware-based security news stories. I played around with more like firmware reverse engineering tools. Like did firmware penetration tests. It was always one of the things that I did was just gravitate because it's so nerdy, but it's also so compartmentalized. Like I felt like I could get my head around it because it is this small little package that you're looking at. Everything is all in one package. I always thought that was really cool too. And it's something that no one pays attention to of the security. I mean, like, let's just be frank. It's one of those things that always seemed to fly under the radar. Since I first started this, even before I started the show, no one wanted to hear anything about printer security. No, none of the vendors wanted to secure it. No one wanted to pay attention to firmware security. And so when I got to this point of earlier this year, I was like, hey, we're still not paying enough attention to firmware security. Like this is still a huge problem in my mind. And I wanted to go tackle a huge problem like that. So it was like a perfect fit for me to look at. And also, you know, I like the dusty corners. I think as hackers and security people, we like those dusty corners. We don't like the mainstream, like here's how you secure your PC, you know, fundamental building blocks. When we want to maybe make a change or go after a project, I want to go after the dusty corners. And it may be those main building blocks and the dusty corners of those main building blocks, right? But I feel like firmware is like two floors down in the basement, like all the way back dusty corner that you got to
uncover. Why don't you think people pay attention to it, though, or put enough attention to securing firmware?
It's a great question, Ashley. I think there's a number of reasons for that. I think one is people have enough on their plate security-wise already. And firmware always seemed to me like the one more thing. Also, I think that it's not something that's easily, it's not very visible either. Like you can run a lot of tools on your computer, servers, whatever, and mm-hmm. never know that you have some of these, what are now kind of esoteric, that my job is to bring these to light, right? Esoteric kind of issues with firmware. It's also traditionally been really hard to update. So even if you know you have a problem, now you've got another problem trying to remediate those issues in firmware. Mm-hmm. And that this kind of ties into the supply chain that I think really overlays nicely now with firmware. I do think it's a really good marriage because what I'm experiencing in firmware is this stuff's hard to fix. And what you end up with is, you ever see the Spider-Man meme where there's multiple Spider-Mans and they're all pointing mm-hmm. the finger at each other? That's what you end up with. Like, who should fix this problem? Like, someone needs, and everyone's just pointing the finger, right? You got your hardware manufacturer, you got your operating system vendor, you've got your BIOS manufacturer, you've got your device driver, you've got your bootloader, and everyone's just pointing fingers. I don't know whose problem is to fix it.
Yeah, and I think also, too, like, there was a period of time where, we just hadn't yet hit the critical mass of devices in a home, right? I actually tried to spin up a startup in 2012, an IoT cybersecurity for the home style startup. And it was just too early, right? Now, when we look at the proliferation of devices in the homes, it's massive. Like, it is absolutely out of control. Everybody's got 20 or 30 internet connected devices in their home. You know, everything from televisions to baby monitors to you name it. And every single one of these devices has firmware. And so there's
the IoT
spread too, right?
I think there's a huge difference between what we think of as firmware. I mean, it is all firmware, but where it lives and how we contextualize it, I think is really important. I think there's the IoT aspect of firmware that's in everyone's homes. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a problem. However, in a home, if someone compromises it, they can only get so far. Also, right. I can just throw that device away and buy a new one. Like a lot of these IoT devices, especially today, maybe in 2012, it might have been different, right?
Certainly today,
Certainly today, throw it away. Go buy a new one. Like, whatever. Mm-hmm. There's firmware, I think, on an enterprise sense that I think is really important. I think your like Cisco switches and things like that is definitely a firmware-based system that we have to pay attention to in the enterprise. The thing that attracted me to Eclipsium is the firmware inside of your computer, the components that make up your computer, your BIOS being one major component that run that has a firmware-based system,
yeah.
Your hard drive, your USB controller, all of these different components within your computer all run firmware and all have a slightly different supply chain. And yeah. When you ask how do I fix that? Who should remediate that? The answer is it depends on what component it is from what manufacturer. And the problem with computers is they stick around longer than they do IoT devices. I can go swap my doorbell out and go swap my doorbell out. I want my laptop for at least a couple of years. I mean, I'm probably on the really high end of like every 2 years I need a new laptop. Like Intel's coming out with the next generation. Like I need that. It's a requirement. Like I need that.
have to have it.
Yeah. When you dip into a larger enterprise, especially, you want a much longer shelf life. You want a longer shelf life from your servers. All that gear. You may want, industrial IoT or operational technology, SCADA systems, ICS. They want a much longer life cycle, mm-hmm. which is even, I think, firmware, but in a different contextualized environment, right? Because of their requirements for running not 2 years, 5 years, but 10 or 20 years.
Yeah. I could even make the argument, too, with the pandemic, that might have shifted some of the IoT into a more mm-hmm. corporate problem and shifted personalized laptops and personal devices into a more corporate problem, where all of that is extending the firmware and supply chain problem that we have from a security perspective in our enterprise environments today. It's becoming rapidly more drastic an issue in the last couple of years.
Yeah, and not even so much with there's a device inside your device. Like there's a computer inside your computer. So it was one of the block when you ask what content.
How meta of you.
Right? When you ask the content that I created. So I came onto Eclipsium and I started using our own commercial product in addition to a number of open source tools, ChipSec being one of them, which I'm lucky that some of the folks that wrote the original versions of ChipSec are the founders of the company Eclipsium that I work for.
Ah, that helps.
My blog posts make me seem really smart. It's really the people I work with that were like, oh yeah, like I found that bug or I wrote that code.
Yeah.
Or I discovered a vulnerability in that. Therefore, I get to ask those people questions. So, and you'll see a special thanks in all those posts to those specific individuals.
There's a certain level of, I think, any kind of content or research that it comes from involving yourself with the correct people around you, right? I mean, and you, all the way back to the early PSW days and having the right culture of people around you made that a successful show.
Yes.
Same thing with the content creation today.
Yeah. Yeah. So I start running all these tools on my own systems and I'm like, I'm really vulnerable. Like my firmware is like way out of date. I'm like, what is this Intel ME thing? Like I have a computer inside my computer that Intel calls the CSME. What is CSME? I don't even remember what CSME. They changed the name so many times. It was manageability engine. It was management engine. And then it was CSME is an acronym for something else in my blog post, right? And it's actually a CPU, dedicated RAM, and it shares storage with your spy flash where your BIOS is stored on your computer and has direct access to everything inside of your computer. And depending on the feature set, even when you turn your computer off, this chipset is still getting power and someone can connect to it and can take over your computer if there are vulnerabilities or if it's not configured properly. And I was like, well, that's kind of scary. So I started
that completely morphs the attack surface. For sure.
Right. Why do I need an IoT device when I've got all of this ripe attack surface sitting right on the computers that everyone is using within the organization? So my first one was about secure boot, and that's a whole rabbit hole we can go down. My second one was on Intel ME. And my third one that posted this week was on the spy flash permissions, the permissions to the physical, like, you know, you get a USB thumb drive. It's got a little flash chip soldered onto the board for storage. Mm-hmm. Your computer has the same thing. It's not as big. I think it's 16 gig, like it again, it depends, but so that's what holds this special storage device called your Spy Flash, holds your BIOS and a number of other important storage areas within your computer. It gets super nerdy and technical, but if it's not protected correctly, attackers can compromise your system, implant malware in it, or just wipe it out and basically, I mean, permanently brick your air cooled.
A true ransom brick.
Yeah. And again, it depends on a number of different factors that are really super. It dips into electrical engineering concepts. But I benefit from having an amazing team, most of which used to work.
It's just so cool to see the growth and direction and transition from, you know, starting at Tenable and moving through creating your own business and focusing on content creation and the meat of the content that you put into that content creation and then taking it all home in what you're doing with Eclipsium. I mean, it's super neat to see you in this new phase, man. I'm really excited for you.
It's a lot of fun. I'm having a lot of fun.
Ashley,
I'm learning
a lot
just listening. So
you know, it's funny.
If you're wondering why I'm quiet, it's literally because I'm listening and cataloging all the things that I now need to do.
In our prep that we do offline, we do a lot of research on our guests and we dig things up. And she sends me this message. She goes, "Holy smokes, he can talk about anything, literally anything." I was like, "Yeah, he's freaking smart and he's nice and he knows what he's talking about. It's a good guy to have on the show."
I also benefit from having interviewed and spent time with the smartest people in our field, hands down. Like that's another kind of like, I feel like I have a disadvantage where oftentimes I sound smart, but it's really because I'm just regurgitating what someone way smarter than me was saying, because I've interviewed all of these wonderfully smart people on the show and continue to do so.
That's part of learning. So
I have a curious question before we get to the game.
But you got to move because we have to end on time today. My wife is stuck somewhere and I got to go get her.
Don't worry. Our game will be relatively short, so don't worry. Okay, so my question that I blanked on earlier was, did you end up building a security program specifically at Security Weekly for your company?
Yeah. Again, that was organic.
What was that like?
Yeah, so people came to work for Security Weekly and like one of the first things we do is I'd be like, "Do you know how to pick locks?" I'm like, "What? No." They're like, "Isn't that illegal?" I'm like, "No, it's a lot of fun."
It's fun.
Like,
here's a lock everyone, pick set.
And I'm like, at some point, I'm like, everyone that works there needs how to learn to pick locks. And so again, I trained the original set of employees how to pick locks, and they would train all the new employees so everyone knows how to pick locks.
Culture.
So anytime there's anything wrong in the building and someone's locked out of something, they come get one of us, and we go pick the locks. So that started building this security culture at Security Weekly. And everyone kind of learned it organically just from sitting around with Larry and Doug and myself, you know, before the show in meetings, listening to our shows because they have to edit our shows or they have to take clips from our shows, just listening to our show. So they could ask us questions at any time. So it just grew organically. And I can tell you that it was successful, actually, at least in this aspect of it, is when we were acquired by CRA. And they would do periodic phishing emails. The Security Weekly employees did not get fooled and reported every single one of them.
There you go.
I was like, wow, organic, like organically that worked.
Oh, yeah. Cool. It helps that they're sitting around and listening to the discussions for 18 hours of content every single week.
Right.
Too.
Yes.
That's still so insane to me. But anyways, well, thank you. Okay. Shall we move on to our game? Since we've got about 10 minutes or so.
Let's do
it.
Yeah. We have roughly 10 minutes to do our game. I know nothing about it. Paul knows nothing about it, other than we were given a list of words, right?
Yes. So this is pulling from Jimmy Fallon's Word Sneak game. And so the goal here, and technically you're not supposed to see all the words at once, but for simplicity's sake, I sent it to you all at once. But you have to go in order. So the goal here is to work each of these words as casually and seamlessly into a conversation with each other as possible. And so you can talk about whatever random. These are all random words.
Okay.
And so you just have to work it seamlessly into a conversation. And as you tick off one, you go in order. So
you have to go in order?
Because, yes, you have to go in order.
Okay.
So Tyler and I are having this conversation?
Correct. Yes.
I got it.
So in other words, we're supposed to have a conversation. I'll hold a carrot out and dangle that carrot in front of you and lead you to some other topics that I want to talk about.
Okay.
Very good. Yes. Yeah, so, ding. And then I will be putting in the chat the words that you're supposed to be.
So I just got my first one, right?
Yes. Yeah.
I cheated to get it. Love it.
Well, Paul.
So what are we going to talk about?
The conversation.
So we just talk about that word? Like, what's the list you sent me? Is that different words?
No, you have to go through your list.
You have to be able to work. Yes. So you have to work.
So Tyler doesn't know what my word is.
Correct.
Correct.
I gotcha. So who's going?
You're welcome to start on a new thread.
We can talk about any kind of conversation you want.
Yes.
Oh.
What's your? So let's talk about cigars. You've been doing a cigar podcast forever too.
I have. It's called the Soggy Geeks, and we talk about cigars. We talk about whiskey and bourbon.
Who's the most famous person you've ever interviewed on Soggy Geeks? Have you ever interviewed anybody famous?
Probably.
Like somebody like Keanu Reeves famous?
No. Maybe Rocky Patel is one of the more widely known names in cigars. Never any famous people that I can think of.
Ashley, put it into the chat.
I am like, come on, Paul. You got to work your words into the chat.
I am. He led me in a completely different direction.
And but then we I also got another ding. Put it in also, the chat. Ding,
but we also talk about food as well in pairing cigars.
Hey, wait a second. My garage door is going up. My puppy might bark. Oh, wait, never mind. My puppy's not going to bark. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Continue, Paul.
So we work it into pairings of food and beer and food. Like lamb is one of my favorite foods in the world. Like lamb stew.
Lamb stew is one of your favorite foods? Like, really? Maybe and you work that in on your podcast about
like mushrooms? You can also relate what you taste in a cigar to things like lamb or mushrooms.
Oh, no.
Or
so
coffee
seriously, though,
or
you can
chocolate.
Connect those? You can connect food and a cigar.
Correct.
So here, you're going to appreciate this, Paul, because of the background. I'm not even going for a word here, but my son's 18th birthday is this weekend, and I'm opening a bottle of George Stagg, and I'm going to give him one of the 2020 cigars of the year for his 18th birthday. That's one of my 18th birthday presents to him. And then that bottle of George Stagg is going to be dedicated to every single big event. So it's just him and my bottle going forward, right? So his 18th birthday, his graduation from college, 21st birthday, blah, 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 until that bottle's gone.
Yeah. So you, when you do that, you have to marry the flavors together with, there's like these wheels that talk about, like, it could be like Earl Grey tea, like Captain Picard, like, and you think about what Earl Grey tea tastes like, and you go, I think I taste that in my cigar.
So if you were really good, I don't know if I have to go in order, but I don't think I'm going to go in order here. So if you were really good, you could equate food from Hooters to a cigar.
Yes.
Yeah.
I really hope Hooters was one of your words.
It was one of them. Of course it was. I don't know how I'm going to get the last one in, though. Did you get all your words in? Did he get all his words in?
I did not.
Nope. He's gotten 3 of his words so far.
I've only got one left. I think I'm the champion in round 1.
Yeah, Paul's got 2 left.
I don't know how to get the last one in.
One of the things we did.
Yours is related to one of his words.
One of the things over the years with Security Weekly, though, is we went to a lot of conferences, a lot of security conferences, a lot of parties. We did a lot of hanging out. There was a lot of drinking involved. I mean, it's no wonder like I didn't get a Pikachu tattoo or something along the way.
Wow. But,
you know what's really funny about Pikachu? You know what's really funny about Pikachu tattoos and tattoos in general is I have a volleyball tattoo. Facts.
Tattoo of a volleyball.
Yeah, that's true. It's actually true. I played college volleyball. I actually have a volleyball tattoo. It's a little known fact. But there we go. We got all our words in for round 1. Are we going to do a round 2?
Good job. Do you want to do a round 2? We have time for it.
We can squeeze in a quick round 2. Yeah, I'm in.
You talk about culture, though, which is interesting at Security Weekly. One of the cultural things is sometimes in the morning, I'll just come in and I'll just make Bloody Marys for everyone. Like, that's a legit thing that happens. I know that's one of my words, but that is a legit thing that happens in the office all the time. Bloody
Mary. Bloody Mary morning. Sam, if you're still listening, you heard that. He's going to make you a Bloody here pretty soon. He's going to come in the office and make you a good Bloody Mary.
And leftover jambalaya from my previous night's cooking.
When you make jambalaya, do you guys sit outside and play guitars and the banjo and stuff like that?
No. Say that we can't.
We do down here in the South. So for those that don't know, where is your where is your studio again, Paul?
It's in Warwick, Rhode Island.
Rhode Island. So they don't have banjos in Rhode Island.
Nope, but they got a lot of mafia history in Rhode Island, though.
Come on, do they really?
They do. Are you serious? Yeah, the mafia is like a thing. Yeah, absolutely. It's a huge thing.
In Rhode Island.
In Rhode
Island.
Tell
me more. Hold on.
Buddy, we'll go listen to the podcast with about Buddy Cianci. It like chronicles all the mafia stuff that happened in Rhode Island.
Oh man, now I can't think of the name.
I can't think of the name of it now.
Was there any like did the mafia people like, you know how they bury bodies? Did they bury any treasure and stuff like that up in Rhode Island?
I'm sworn to secrecy. I can't.
You could tell me, but then you'd have to kill me and have that Spider-Man meta thing going on. Have that come back to life and haunt me. That would just be no good. We talked a little bit about the banjo. What's your favorite instrument? Is it like the bagpipes or something?
Because
I can see you being a bagpiper. Like that wouldn't surprise me. I just see you.
I don't play the bagpipes.
You're right, because you probably would sound like poop if you did. You totally would sound like poop if you did.
My dad played the accordion.
Oh. You totally should have played the bagpipes then.
Right, we would have made a great band.
Oh my God, you would have been like the Scottish waltzers, polka. The Scottish polka would have been a great combination. Did you get all your words in? Oh, you missed one. I got all mine.
No,
you couldn't figure out how to get giraffe in there.
Nope, or Nicolas Cage. I couldn't do as hard as I tried. I failed. I totally failed.
Because Nick Cage is the second worst.
You started talking about music, man, and it threw me off. I was like,
Nick Cage plays an instrument.
Like a really bad Nicolas Cage movie. I don't know. Like I was that one. I was on the cusp, and then I was really struggling with giraffe.
He was trying. All right, Paul.
Thank you, man. I'll tell you what.
It was super awesome having you on the show, man. I love doing these shows with my old friends, guys and gals that I've known forever. So thanks for coming on, man.
Thanks for having me.
One of the cultural things that I like to do on the show is kick the guest off. So at the end of the show here, you know what? Thank you for coming on, Paul. Get the hell off my show. All right, Ashley. How long until our next show? 2 weeks?
2 weeks. We got 2 weeks. Just as a reminder for everybody, we air on the first and third Tuesday of every month. So our next one is in 2 weeks. So tune in on October 4th. It is Cybersecurity Awareness Month. So
we'll have some good content, I hope. Please go ahead and hit the follows, the likes, the subscribes, the notifies, all those check boxes. Do the smashing things that everybody says to do. We do appreciate that. Feel free to comment in the comment section. We will try to respond to all of those. Again, thank you to our guest, Paul Isidorian, for coming on this week. Thank you for my co-host, my wonderful co-host and super producer, Ashley Lee. And with that, thank you for the fun game. We'll see y'all later.